Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf behind the console. Jane Houghton and our producer this morning. And it is day 17 of the Russian invasion in Ukraine, 1:08 in the afternoon in Ukraine. And we're going to get in detail about what has been happening overnight in Ukraine. But first, we need to talk about what's been happening overnight here in the nation's capital and what we expect to happen today. Alex Liggett joins us from the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center. Alex, thank you for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've got precipitation around the Washington area. It's windy and gusty already this morning. There's been talk of a bomb cyclone hitting the northeast. Tell us what to expect.
Things are actually getting pretty wild as we speak. I'm looking at all of our area cameras here at Stormwatch 7, and I'm seeing the transition from rain over to some heavy snow and blowing snow, particularly along and just west of the Blue Ridge. Areas in Winchester already seeing a coating on some of the roads and on the pavement sidewalks. I just had a report from someone near Martinsburg. It's snowing sideways there. Even have some thunderstorms south of D.C., a very dynamic system with rain changing over to snow over the next few hours here. And then just a thump of snow as we head towards the mid-morning hours, kind of tapering off as we head towards midday.
Now, you mentioned the snow is sticking on the roads out in the Winchester area. As you look at the temperatures around the region, where can we expect some tough road conditions this morning, and how will that transpire through the day in terms of the temperatures?
So the highest likelihood for those impacts on the roads will be farther to the north and west. We're still in the lower to mid-40s and around the D.C. metro, some spots still in the upper 40s east of town. We're expecting a coating to maybe upwards of 2 inches closer to the 95 corridor in points east, but there may be 2 to 5 inches just west of I-95. I mean, this could include areas such as Western Fairfax, Montgomery County, Loudoun County. Those locations, once this changes over to snow, we're expecting the possibility for snowfall rates of 1 inch to 2 inches per hour. That will overcome the warm road surface temperatures, even though we hit the lower 60s yesterday. So, yes, you have to watch out for those road conditions. And then temperatures, they're going to plummet through the afternoon back in the 30s, eventually into the 20s as well. And winds, they will be strong as well, upwards of 50 miles per hour, very dynamic system.
And those 50-mile-an-hour winds during the snow, or do they come in later after the snow?
So we're already seeing wind gusts upwards of 30, 35. There's a little bit higher likelihood for the stronger gusts through the afternoon and later on this evening. That's because that area of low pressure will be intensifying as it goes off the eastern shore and moves off the coast. That's what we call, you know, a bomb cyclone, is when a cyclone intensifies by 24 millibars in 24 hours. That's the meteorological definition. So, yeah, as that happens, we'll see the stronger winds from the tightening pressure gradient between big area high pressure coming in tomorrow and that exiting low today.
Alex Liggett, thank you very much from the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Stay warm.
You too. And, boy, it's supposed to be springtime. We're talking about the cherry blossoms, and we got snow surrounding us this morning. Well, as I mentioned, it is the 17th day of that Russian invasion in Ukraine. Reports this morning that Russian shelling has hit a mosque sheltering 80 people. The Russian military continues to target sites ringed around the city of Kyiv this morning. Intense fighting reported there. Ukraine's top diplomat on Friday pushing back on the suggestion of, quote, positive movement in talks with Russia that had been cited Friday by Vladimir Putin. Ukraine says there's been, quote, no progress, zero progress, according to Ukraine's top diplomat. The count now, about 2.5 million Ukrainians have fled the country, a majority crossing over to Poland. Estimates now that that number could climb to 4 million within days. The European Union has proposed to double the size of a fund that provides weapons to Ukraine. It's also dispersed 300 million euros in financial aid, with more to come. Additional EU sanctions expected to be confirmed. The U.S. now banning imports of Russian caviar, vodka, and diamonds, in the latest U.S. efforts to pressure the Kremlin. The U.S. and NATO are shipping weapons into Ukraine at breakneck speed, including highly sensitive items such as shoulder-fired missiles called the Man-Portable Air Defense Systems, also known as MANPADs. They are designed to take down aircraft. Now, that raises questions because some are concerned about what happens if those weapons get into the wrong hands. Well, that question was asked. A senior U.S. defense official said on Friday, quote, "Frankly, we believe that risk is worth taking right now because the Ukrainians are fighting so skillfully with the tools at their disposal and they're using them so creatively." As we continue on the Saturday morning update, we'll be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about a lot of the military details. We'll talk with KT McFarland on the foreign policy aspects. What's next and how we handle Vladimir Putin, and what does Putin do next after Ukraine? Cheryl Atkinson will join us this morning. She's got stories from both the northern border and the southern border. We'll be talking with Jennifer Harper. She's got some interesting poll numbers and also the very latest on the former president, Donald Trump. He is holding a rally tonight. We'll tell you about that, where and when. That's coming up with Jennifer Harper this morning. You may have seen the outburst in the courtroom yesterday as finally the Empire actor Jussie Smollett was sentenced after his hate crime hoax. We've got the audio on that. We'll discuss the details with Jim Trusty, our legal expert this morning. So we have got a lot to cover on the Saturday morning update. One of the big debates in the country right now, of course, oil prices, and as we've seen in the last couple of days, there is a very interesting mission now that the Democrats are undertaking, and that is to blame Vladimir Putin for virtually everything, everything that happened prior to the invasion of Ukraine. It's all Putin's fault. And we'll start with President Biden.
I'm sick of this stuff. We have to talk about it because the American people think the reason for inflation is government spending more money. Simply not true. Make no mistake, inflation is largely the fault of Putin. Democrats didn't cause this problem. Vladimir Putin did. And we are working on to fix it.
Well, that's what the president had to say about the inflation situation. Now, let's turn to oil. I want to take you back to the campaign. There's a propaganda effort right now by the Democrats and the White House, and we'll play a little bit of Jen Psaki here in a moment or two, but I want to go back to the campaign. This is President Biden's war on fossil fuels, war on the oil industry, liquid natural gas. This is how President Biden laid out what he was going to do to the fossil fuel industry. Now, keep this in mind. If you're in the oil industry, are you going to start drilling right now, or would you have started drilling over the past year, maybe taking advantage of some of these quote-unquote oil leases that Jen Psaki keeps talking about? If you had heard this during the presidential campaign about a year and a half ago?
Doing away with any subsidies for fossil fuels, number one. Number two, holding them liable for what they have done. And by the way, when they don't or when they're deliberate, put them in jail.
I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out.
No more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill. Period. Ends.
Period. Ends. All right. So here's the propaganda effort from Jen Psaki. Now, this is on Twitter. It's this beautifully produced Twitter video. I mean, they've got the special effects, and you can tell this one is for the Kool-Aid drinkers. This is for aimed at the young people, and just listen to the way Jen Psaki is condescending here and talking to you like you're a five-year-old. And this is Jen Psaki talking about the oil industry after you heard Biden says, end, no, period, gonna throw him in jail. But here's Jen Psaki's take now on the oil industry.
You may have noticed this week that your gas prices have gone up. I want to talk to you a little bit about why. A lot of it has to do with Vladimir Putin, and there's opportunities to produce more from here. But part of this is on the oil companies. Right now, there are 9,000 approved unused permits that oil and gas companies could tap into now to ramp up production. That's why the president has been so focused on investing in clean energy technologies, so that we can rely on that and not President Putin to set the price of gas.
So that's Jen Psaki, and do you like the music in the background? I mean, you know, it's the perfect propaganda video there. Joe Manchin has made some comments as of yesterday. He's a little concerned about the progress here of the clean energy versus where we should be, and this is Joe Manchin.
All for wind, I'm all for solar, but it can only do so much right now. I mean, in storage, I'm all for storage. We're looking at that. We're putting a lot of money in research and development for technology for storage. I'm supportive of all of the above. I just don't want to be counting on something until I see it's there. I'm not pushing through quickly. Just do your damn job.
Just do your damn job. I don't want to be counting on something until I see it. Sounds like common sense to me. It's 20 after 6. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL traffic center this morning.
On the outer loop of the Beltway in Virginia, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked in Annandale, approaching Braddock Road. In Virginia on 66, no delays have been reported eastbound and westbound. 95 in Virginia, you're at speed north and south between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. In D.C., 295, 395, and 695. I don't have any reports of any delays there. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, you're at speed both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. Bridge to bridge, lanes are clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings across the area today. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert. Rain changing to snow quickly this morning as we have a very strong cold front moving through that will drop temperatures into the 30s and eventually 20s this afternoon. Best chance for snow this morning through around midday. We should see a taper off into the afternoon. May see some additional snow showers. Generally speaking, around 1 to 3 inches around the D.C. metro with some higher totals areas to the west. Heading towards your Sunday, of course, don't forget to spring forward 1 hour before going to bed tonight. High temperatures tomorrow into the lower 40s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
And in the nation's capital, 41 degrees, 622, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Well, these days it's hard to make sense of the news, but we try our best here at WMAL. A lot of questions swirling about why the MiG fighters that Poland has offered, why those fighters can't get to Ukrainian pilots. And we've all talked about that no-fly zone. We all understand that might be pushing the envelope a little too far. But the question on the MiG fighters was brought up by Senator Tom Cotton. It's a hearing with a number of the Defense Department officials, and he addresses a question, and General Scott Barrier answers the question from Senator Tom Cotton.
General Barrier, could you explain, as an intelligence officer, how Vladimir Putin might be A-OK with us transferring missiles that turn their tanks into burning piles of rubbish or shoot their jets out of the sky, yet transferring tactical aircraft is going to be unacceptable? Why is the latter escalatory and the former not escalatory?
Senator Cotton, thank you. I will take a stab at that in open session here. I think when you look at anti-tank weapons and air defense shoulder-fired kinds of weapons, there is a range of escalation. And I think in our view, that escalation ladder doesn't get checked higher with those weapons versus something like combat aircraft.
I got to say, I don't think there's a lot of common sense between this distinction, and a lot of farmers in Arkansas wouldn't understand it either.
I don't know how you feel about some of the administration folks as far as, are they in over their head? You know, you ask yourself that question. And we'll flash back for a second to Jennifer Granholm. the Secretary of Energy, who, when she was asked about oil production, you may remember this, we've seen where the oil prices have gone. We have no idea when that's going to get under control. The administration keeps telling us to buy electric vehicles, and I don't know how much money you've got, but electric vehicles ain't exactly a cheap date these days yet. So when all of this is culminating the way it is today, just remember, this is our Secretary of Energy when she's asked a fairly straight question.
What is the Granholm plan to increase oil production in America?
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. Would that I had the magic wand on this. As you know, of course, oil is a global market. It is controlled by a cartel. That cartel is called OPEC, and they made a decision yesterday that they were not going to increase beyond what they were already planning.
So that's Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm. How does that make you feel? You feel confident in the leadership of our administration? Well, Vice President Harris on the road, also known as Giggles, the Vice President. Unfortunately, this happened, and I hate to be so critical, but these are the top people leading our country. And this is Vice President Harris when she's asked a question about refugees. It's a press conference with President Duda in Poland, and this is the question about refugees, and somehow she ends up laughing her way out of this one.
Is the United States willing to make a specific allocation for Ukrainian refugees? And for President Duda, I wanted to know if you think, and if you asked the United States to specifically accept more refugees.
Okay. A friend in need is a friend in need.
I mean, it was the extended giggle. I mean, you know, the first laugh maybe, but then we just keep on giggling. And we're talking about refugees in Poland coming out of Ukraine. That wasn't one of her best moments. And it's troubling when you expect the top people in the country. She's number two in the country. It's troubling when you expect that they will be in command or at least able to answer a question. This is Vice President Harris when she's asked about inflation, changes the subject, just dodges it.
President Biden has said that Americans will feel some pain for the sake of defending freedom and liberty, but there does seem to be no end game in sight. How long should Americans expect, how long should we be bracing for this really sort of historic inflation and some unprecedented gas prices?
Sure. In terms of the discussions that the President, Johannes, and I had, they ranged in subject, including the issue of the Black Sea, and I'll let him explain in more detail as he would like.
Okay, let's just go to some other subject. Anyway, that's just some sense of our leadership. I mentioned the Jussie Smollett sentencing yesterday in a Chicago courtroom, and we'll talk about it in detail with Jim Trusty, but I just wanted you to hear the audio on it because you will hear people talking about it, and if you didn't hear his outburst, this is Jussie Smollett, of course. He is the Empire actor that was convicted by a jury of faking a hate crime. He was sentenced to 150 days in jail, and this was his reaction. You'll hear the judge first.
You will spend the first 150 days of your sentence in the Cook County Jail, and that will start today, right here, right now.
I am not suicidal.
Okay?
I am not suicidal. I am innocent, and I am not suicidal. If I did this, then it means that I stuck my fist in the fears of Black Americans in this country for over 400 years and the fears of the LGBTQ community. And if anything happens to me when I go in there, I did not do it to myself. And you must all know that.
I am not suicidal.
Stop laughing about Black people.
I am not suicidal. And I am innocent. I could have said that I was guilty a long time ago.
So that's Jussie Smollett as he is led to jail. It's 6:29. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of kidnapping the mayor of a city, calling the abduction, quote, a new stage of terror. Russian forces have expanded their offensive into western Ukraine, hitting two towns. New satellite images appear to show Russian artillery firing on residential areas between Russian forces and the capital. Meanwhile, Russia's baseless claims that the U.S. is conducting biological activities in Ukraine persist. At a meeting of the U.N. Security Council, the U.S. said Russia was lying and spreading disinformation. The war has forced more than 2.5 million people to flee Ukraine. U.S. soldiers are continuing to deploy to Europe. They're joining thousands already sent overseas to support NATO allies amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Troops from the 87th Division Sustainment Support Battalion, 3rd Division Sustain Brigade, gathered on Friday at Hunter Airfield in Savannah, Georgia, departing on a charter flight. The soldiers are in addition to the estimated 3,800 soldiers from the Army's 3rd Infantry Division who deployed recently from nearby Fort Stewart in Georgia. The division commander said that the soldiers are being told to prepare for about 6 months overseas. The Pentagon has ordered roughly 12,000 total service members from various U.S. bases to Europe. And Republicans have pushed a bill through the Georgia House on Friday that would abolish the requirement for a background check and license to carry a handgun in public. The vote moving Georgia a step closer to the constitutional carry that Governor Brian Kemp and other Republicans have promised to deliver. The bill moves to the Senate for more debate. The state Senate last month passed a similar measure. Republicans say that measure is needed to allow people more easily to protect themselves from crime. Democrats say it would fuel gun deaths by encouraging more guns, increasing crime, and putting police officers' lives in danger. It's 6:33 on the Saturday morning update. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, heads up on the outer loop of the Beltway. There is a crash in Annandale. Right lane is blocked approaching Braddock Road, exit 54. On 95 northbound in Dumfries, you're going to find a crash there. Two left lanes are blocked approaching Dumfries Road. 66 in Fairfax County, I don't have any reports of any problems eastbound or westbound. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, all lanes are at the posted speed limit on the inner loop and on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings across the area today. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert. Rain changing to snow quickly this morning as we have a very strong cold front moving through that will drop temperatures into the 30s and eventually 20s this afternoon. Best chance for snow this morning through around midday. We should see it taper off into the afternoon. May see some additional snow showers. Generally speaking, around 1 to 3 inches around the D.C. metro with some higher totals areas to the west. Heading towards your Sunday, of course, don't forget to spring forward 1 hour before going to bed tonight. High temperatures tomorrow into the lower 40s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
41 degrees in the nation's capital at 6:35.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper with us every weekend. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
I found your article about companies no longer doing business with Russia to be quite interesting this week. And why don't you tell us some of them?
Yes, it's a very lengthy list here, and it's a perfect example of what our war watchers would call soft power. In the sense of this is a way to get an edge on our friends overseas. In fact, this was noticed by Adweek. That is a major industry source for advertising. They have to say the soft power of economics and culture is power. And they were among those who were charting the, at this point, between 300 and 400 of major brand names, major companies who have ceased their Russian operations in order to protest the war on Ukraine. They say money matters in war, and symbols like McDonald's golden arches send a real message. This is according to Adweek, and just a little bit from their list. Let's go really quick. It's from Adweek. And also CBS News went after this as well. But here we go. I'll do it as fast as I can. Among the energy companies, BP, ExxonMobil, Shell, Boeing, Airbus, Daimler Truck, Ferrari, Ford Motor Company, Harley-Davidson, Mercedes-Benz, Renault, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Volvo. Let's move on to Adidas, Airbnb, Budvar, and Carlsberg Breweries, Disney, Estee Lauder, H&M, IKEA, Nike, Richemont, Swatch Group, TJX Companies, that's Marshall's, TJ Maxx, and Home Goods, General Electric, Honeywell, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Starbucks, Nestle's, Papa John's, Unilever. Moving on, Carnegie Hall has pulled their plug on it. Metropolitan Opera, Live Nation, that's behind all those rock and roll concerts, along with Discover, Moody's, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, FedEx, UPS, Netflix, Apple, Dell, Fortinet, Meta, Spotify, Trimble, and TikTok. That's just the beginning. It's still going on, but that's just an example of the soft power that's going on that's kind of reassuring in its own way.
Well, I hope they add AutoZone and Napa Auto Parts to the list, because if the Russians can't get any parts for their vehicles, they're not going to be happy. So Vice President Harris has provided us some more cringeworthy moments this week as she's been on the road in Europe. And you have some poll numbers about the confidence that Americans have for the president on the world stage.
Yes, indeed. This is a fairly straightforward poll this early in the morning. It's coming from Economist and YouGov, and it was conducted March 5 through 8. And currently, Rick, 50% of U.S. adults are uneasy about President Biden's ability to deal wisely with an international crisis. That includes 84% of Republicans, 59% of independents, and 19% of Democrats, and another 33%, only a third, have confidence in his ability to deal with an international crisis. That would include 8% of Republicans, 25% of independents, and 64% of those loyal Democrats. And the rest are undecided. But, you know, you did mention Vice President Harris overseas, and a columnist for the Spectator World, that is the U.S. edition of the Spectator. That's one of the Britain's very influential magazines. This gentleman, Roger Kimball, is a columnist, and he has come up with a new name for the kind of work that the vice president has been doing, and he's calling it cackle diplomacy.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed. He says, you can tell that the Biden administration is getting serious. They have unleashed their ultimate weapon, cackle diplomacy. The warhead is nicknamed Harris, and it is now in Poland, cackling away, endeavoring to assemble the highest-level pierogies before Russia flattens Kiev or Vladimir Putin decides to go nuclear. And by nuclear, alas, I mean go nuclear. And as we all know, the vice president went to Poland on Wednesday, and we all wish her well, of course. I certainly do. And Mr. Kimball says, some observers say that sending Kamala Harris on this mission will give her a chance to burnish her foreign policy credentials. Cynical folks, and I would include myself in that group, think it is just another emission of fog by America's first certifiably senile administration. So that's a little interesting bit from the Spectator World from Roger Kimball. And by the way, he's the editor and publisher of the New Criterion, publisher of Encounter Books, and a contributing editor to The Spectator.
One of the things I found of interest in what you just reported was the poll number that the independents had such little trust in President Biden, and that's coming from independents. We expect it from Republicans, and we expect the Democrats will drink the Kool-Aid. But when the independents are very worried about the president on the world stage, that's trouble for the Democrats.
Yes, indeed. That will be very telling in the 2022 midterm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of talk about World War III, and while we're on poll numbers, what the survey saying about how people feel about a possible third world war?
Yeah, well, gosh, there's always a poll for something, isn't there? And we have to wonder, is the unthinkable a possibility? And we're going back to our friends at the Economist YouGov poll, because they just poll about everything. And certainly there are some folks out there that are well aware of the heightened chances of nuclear war if they were thinking about the 1950s and the Cold War and so forth, so they may be familiar with this. But 48% of U.S. adults now say there is a greater chance of a nuclear war compared to 5 years ago, and only 26% say that the chances are the same now. And we can move right along. They asked whether you felt that the chances of a world war were a possibility as well, and they were even more pronounced. 57% of U.S. adults say there is a greater chance of a world war compared to 5 years ago. And they asked if there was going to be a new Cold War, and essentially they got the same answer here. About 6 out of 10 adults were thinking the same thing. And I have another poll for you. It's from Quinnipiac. It's an academic poll. I always pay attention. And they asked a very interesting question to their respondents. They asked, when confronted with a terrible hypothetical, such as the Ukrainians, would you stay and fight if this was on your homeland territory, or would you seek safety in another country and flee? This is what they asked. And so here's what they found. A majority, 55% of Americans say they would stay and fight. 38% say they would leave the country. There was a very interesting partisan divide here among Republicans. 68% said they would fight. 25% said they would leave. Among Democrats, 40% said they'd fight, 52% would leave, and among independents, 57% would fight, 36% would leave. But it's a telling moment here, and I got a lot of response about that poll from people saying, well, why don't the Democrats want to stay here? So anyway, that's what people are thinking this morning.
So I've seen President Trump on the tube recently making his comments. He was on Fox for an extended period on Thursday night. He will be in South Carolina tonight, surrounded by supporters. And what do we expect?
Well, here's what we can expect here. I always pay attention when there's a Trump rally out there because I like to see what the enthusiasm factor is. And believe it or not, the grassroots enthusiasm is still really percolating out there for the former president. And indeed, he does have the Save America rally in Florence, South Carolina tonight. It's kind of a traditional rally that he's perfected. And I did some research to find that when he was running for president the first time, he had 350 rallies. So he has this down to a science. That was according to the Associated Press way back in 2018. But anyway, he's going to have some interesting guests with him. South Carolina Governor Henry McMasters will be there, and some GOP congressional hopefuls will be along. Of course, South Carolina Republican Party Chairman Drew McKissick will be with him, and also Brandon Judd. He is the president of the National Border Patrol Council, a very interesting guy. But the thing that I noticed, there was some commentary coming out from some of the people who were going to attend the rally. The reason I paid attention to it is because it really represents the sentiments that are still out there, why people care for Trump and why they still support him. And this is coming from WBTW. This is a local CBS affiliate in South Carolina. And here is what Lynn Newsom told them. He is the owner of Trumpville in the Carolinas. That's a Trump merchandise store in the town of Darlington. This is what he had to say. I'm 75 years old. I remember the president's back to Eisenhower. I was never a political person until Trump came along. And what I like about him is that he does what he says he's going to do. And then they went on to Johnny Tiller, and he was a local resident also. He's going to go to the rally tonight with his son. And this is what he had to say. I'm looking to see the excitement of the people just like me. We believe in something, and we want to stand up for what's right, and we know Trump will do the right thing. I'm there to see Trump and his message. So interesting insight into the folks who are still out there supporting the former president.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you very much, as always. And, of course, you can follow Jennifer on Twitter at Harper Bulletin.
Thanks a lot, Rick, and have a good weekend, everybody.
And you too. 6:47, Saturday morning update. The actor Jussie Smollett for Empire in the courtroom yesterday in his hate crime hoax case. The sentence was announced. We'll have the very latest from Jim Trustee on that. That's next. But first, we are off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Albie D is there.
Good morning. On the Beltway in Maryland, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you're not tapping the brakes. There isn't anything in the road to slow you down on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Prince George's County, traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, I don't have any reports of any slowdowns northbound or southbound. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear. And in Montgomery County on 270, it's clear north and south between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings across the area today. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert. Rain changing to snow quickly this morning as we have a very strong cold front moving through that will drop temperatures into the 30s and eventually 20s this afternoon. Best chance for snow this morning through around midday. We should see it taper off into the afternoon. May see some additional snow showers. Generally speaking, around 1 to 3 inches around the D.C. metro with some higher totals areas to the west. Heading towards your Sunday, of course, don't forget to spring forward 1 hour before going to bed tonight. High temperatures tomorrow into the lower 40s under partly cloudy skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
41 degrees, 6:49 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Be a part of the conversation and stay informed.
Follow WMALDC on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, also the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks. Good morning.
It's been a long courtroom saga for Jussie Smollett, but he left the court and he didn't go home on Thursday. Tell us what happened.
Well, Mr. Smollett had a very emotional sentencing hearing, and at the end of the hearing, he was sentenced on his five counts of felony disorderly conduct to 150 days in jail. We can talk about the nature of the charge and the sentence in a second, but what grabbed the headlines yesterday was his exit from the courtroom, in which he was crying out for all to hear that he is not suicidal and that he's also innocent. So I guess he was basically saying, I don't want to end up dead in prison, and if I do, it's not a suicide. It kind of underscored that there's a lot of crazy emotional issues there going on with this guy. But it followed a sentencing in which the judge, I think, actually was quite sensitive. I've read a lot of media accounts saying the judge was, you know, blasting away at Smollett. I actually read it differently. I think the judge was explaining that Smollett had already suffered so many consequences in terms of destroyed reputation, loss of professional advancement, everything else, that, you know, he didn't think a higher sentence was needed than 150 days.
I've heard that one courtroom strategy over the years has been to throw yourself at the mercy of the court and hope for the best. Had Jussie Smollett at some point said, you know, I made a really, really big mistake, and I apologize, and I throw myself at the mercy of the court. Not exactly that language, but you get the idea. Would he have gotten basically slapped on the wrist instead of 150 days in the slammer?
I think almost absolutely. He did commit a very horrific, divisive crime, and really the real hate crime was what he did. But he absolutely did not have exactly a legal A-team defending him. Remember, his attorney, one of his attorneys, claimed the judge assaulted her at a bench conference. I mean, you know, during the trial, you've got an attorney making up crimes at the expense of the judge. So, yeah, I don't think he had exactly a stellar team surrounding him. Maybe he made the ultimate decision and it didn't matter what they told him. But this is a case where you could come in and do a very compelling job talking about mental health issues and how sorry he is, how he's gone out and done community service, how he wants to speak to young kids about making dumb mistakes. There's a lot you could work with this guy to come up with a fairly, if not a compelling package, at least one that would justify a judge treating it as disorderly conduct rather than a hate crime. But that's not the route he took. He instead left the courtroom kicking and screaming about how innocent he was, despite overwhelming evidence and despite a trial verdict. And that puts a judge in a bit of a box where they can't credit him for any sort of remorse or acceptance of responsibility, and that factors into the sentence.
You mentioned his legal team. If an attorney is retained by somebody like that is just adamant that they pursue a strategy that is doomed to fail, Do you continue with that client or do you resign from the case?
That's a great question. I mean, you can't contribute to perjury. In other words, you can't have a client tell you, hey, I'm going to go up there and lie. But it's usually a much grayer conversation than that. And if Smollett was insisting that he wants to go to trial, that is ultimately his decision. Now, a good attorney or a good set of attorneys are going to, you know, we call it take him to the woodshed. They're going to take him to a conference room and spend days, weeks, whatever it takes to impress upon him how foolish that decision is. But at the end of the day, if the client decides to go to trial in a criminal case, that's their ultimate choice, and you have to ride it out. I mean, there are trials that we would characterize as suicide runs, you know, where you've got DNA, a videotape, and a nun that saw it happen, and a defendant will still decide that they have to go to trial, and the attorney has to just kind of suck it up and deal with it.
Not only was Jussie Smollett impacted by this trial, the state's attorney, Kim Fox, ran into a lot of problems because of this trial. What's the very latest on her fate?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about the independent counsel's investigation into the Cook County District Attorney's Office, and they found that Kim Fox and some of her staff had behaved unbelievably unprofessionally to the point of deceiving the public, deceiving the court, doing all sorts of things. And, of course, Kim Fox presided over a midnight deal originally for Jussie Smollett where he had almost no consequences for this conduct. Well, yesterday, Kim Fox reared her head again now that the recused case is done, slamming the prosecution as damaging, costly, and disingenuous, referring to it as a kangaroo court. And it really is just astounding that a chief law enforcement official for a place as big as Cook County, Chicago, is touting this notion that it's a kangaroo court because she wasn't a part of it. And now she's pretending, much like Jussie, that he is a victim. So I think this confirms that she had no business being anywhere near this case. It also shows that she's really just a very small person, that she's bitter about the independent counsel unraveling her office's corrupt cronyism that favored Smollett, and she's kicking and screaming all the way about how unfair it was and how murder victims in Chicago are being neglected in favor of this case, which is pretty outrageous coming from the person who presides over that prosecuting office.
So she's still state's attorney?
She is.
Jussie Smollett was found guilty by a jury?
Correct, but somehow that's a kangaroo court in Kim Fox's mind.
So the state's attorney attacks a trial where the suspect was found guilty by a jury. The state's attorney.
Right. Pretty historic moment to have somebody doing that. You know, a representative of the criminal justice system in a really besieged state like Chicago, Illinois, attacking the system as being unfair. It's really, I hope that there's more fallout from that independent counsel report on her, and I hope they add a chapter based on today's conduct.
Jim, we often wonder how grand juries operate, how they come to the conclusions that they reach. And you found a very interesting story about a Houston Texans quarterback and a grand jury investigation.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me just in terms of what the procedure means. And Deshaun Watson's a big name. This is a Houston Texans quarterback that sat out the entire season last year because of allegations of sexual misconduct. The Clemson graduate had a promising season as a quarterback, but they accumulated to an unbelievable degree with these 22 complaints that he is facing civilly. Now, at the same time as the civil lawsuits, 9 different complaints made their way into a criminal presentation for the grand jury to consider indicting him. And yesterday, the grand jury in Harris County, Texas, declined to indict. So Deshaun Watson appears to be home free on any criminal charges, although he's enmeshed in numerous civil lawsuits. But again, for his career, this is a big moment. I think what's helpful is for people to understand a little bit about prosecutors and grand juries. You know, a lot of us have heard sayings like a prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich, meaning whatever they present to this group in a quiet, secure building with no judge and no defense attorney and no defendant, they can kind of get whatever they want. And there's some truth to that, although it's mostly because the standard is so low. All we're talking about is probable cause, not whether the case will hang together at trial. But what I think a lot of people may not know is that the prosecutors don't have to go in and ask for an indictment in every case. In fact, some offices make it a policy that every police shooting gets presented to a grand jury, and that doesn't mean they're asking for an indictment. They may say, do what you want to do, here's the evidence, or they may take an affirmative position against indicting it. So the great mystery for this situation for Deshaun Watson down in Houston, and one I don't think we have any way of ever unraveling if they don't want to talk about it, is whether the Harris County District Attorney's Office was pursuing an indictment or whether they were washing the case out and essentially hiding behind the grand jury. Either is certainly in play, and I just think it's worth noting that that's really how the system works, and there's a lot of criticism of it, but ultimately the grand jury has an awful lot of authority, and prosecutors have a lot of discretion, and a lot of this never sees daylight.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you, Jim.
Sure, thanks. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:59 on Saturday morning update, 7 o'clock news coming up, then John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland.
Midterm election years like 2022 tend to bring more unstable markets. As politicians pursue policies to motivate their base, we often see a higher volatility. But the time following a midterm election year can serve as a great buying opportunity. I'm Chase Hinterstein, host of the Wise Investor Show. Every week we discuss the latest economic trends and what investors need to know about them. For ideas on how to prepare your portfolio for 2022 and beyond, and to become a better informed wise investor, listen to the Wise Investor Show at thewiseinvestorgroup.com or find us on your favorite podcast app.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.